Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, undivided, we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it. The time is prime, planets aligned, ain't no mistaking. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened. The sleeping giant, come on, yeah, we can do it. We need to revive, re-amp, and re-up the labor movement.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com, here at the Bat Congress. Enjoying our day. Hope you are as well. If you've missed any coverage, any bit of our coverage here of the Bat Congress, go to thericksmithshow.com. We'll have all the interviews up for folks to pick and choose from, share with their friends, their neighbors. It's good stuff. And really, it's the beginning of that organizing, getting people involved, talking to their representatives, talking to their neighbors, their friends, their families, and yes, their teachers and schools. I'm sitting here with Steven Singer, the wonderful, amazing, fantastic blogger over at Gadfly on the Wall. Steven, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me again, Rick.
Always great to have you on the program. You were one of the guys who I know spent a considerable amount of time the last couple of days up on the Hill talking to Pennsylvania representatives and representatives other places as well. What'd you find? I mean, if you had a couple of words to throw into that, were you surprised by what you heard? Were you not? How did that go?
I was definitely surprised. I learned a lot being on Capitol Hill and talking to, well, the big thing I learned was that I wasn't really going to get to talk to any actual legislators. I was going to get to talk to their aides, which is fine, I suppose.
I could have told you that.
Well, some of our bats did get to talk to actual legislators, but most of us talked to aides. And what I learned that I didn't know was that most of these aides who are dealing with education issues, they don't have very much background in education at all. And the background they do have is a little strange. I had five meetings yesterday. I met with Senator Toomey's office, Senator Casey's office, and my congressman, Representative Doyle's office, as well as some in New Jersey. I met with Senator Booker's office and
Congressman. Well, that had to be fun.
Oh, that yes, that's a story in itself, let me tell you. But what was interesting was these aides, the senator, a Republican congressman from New Jersey, Congressman Smith, he had the most knowledgeable aide. She, her mother was a special education teacher. Her brother was a paraprofessional, and she had a degree in education law. So she had the most knowledge about actual education. Other than that, there was someone, I was so shocked to find that in Senator Casey's office, his education aide was a TFA, Teach for America recruit. He also worked for Michelle Rhee when she was in D.C. That's where his education background came from. And he was very knowledgeable, but it was a very strange situation to talk to him about education, because I'm saying we need to stop privatization and standardization, which are things, you know, his background, and he's saying, yeah, we totally agree. It's a little cognitive dissonance there. In Senator Toomey's office, the aide that he had, she had a background in social work, but she had taught at a school resource room for a couple of years. And other than that, we're talking poli-sci, really nothing to deal with education at all. So the thing I was surprised about was, if I was a legislator and I really wanted an expert opinion on education, why wouldn't I hire someone who had a background in it? It's not like there's a shortage of people who have that knowledge. More than 200,000 teachers have been put out of work in the last couple years because of budget cuts. I mean, sounds like that would be a perfect segue to get these people with all this knowledge and experience if you really, you know, prioritize that, if it was something you wanted. So I was surprised that that wasn't something that legislators seem to be putting a priority on, that kind of knowledge.
Now, you had a good cross-section of Democrats, Republicans, so because education, I don't think, is a partisan issue. I think all Democrats, Republicans, independents, whatever your affiliation is, they want their kids to get the best education possible. I truly believe that, because if I didn't, I would have more problems than I already do. But I look at this, and I go, you know, there are two very different views on education, but it doesn't seem to me the political world shares those views. I think we've all moved politically down the, hey, let's move towards privatizing.
It does seem to be the case on both. Well, on both sides, it seems to be the case, but they approach it differently. For example, both Democrats and Republicans, for the most part, seem to champion privatization of schools, but Democrats will support charter schools, whereas Republicans will support school vouchers. And it comes down to kind of the same thing, but it's just different terms for it. And some legislators will support both. I think you're right that everyone wants their own children to have the best. But the problem is, when it comes to other people's children, I think there are far too many people that make that distinction and say, well, you know, I'm gonna do what I can for my kids, but your kids, well, you know, it's not really a public responsibility. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to prioritize everyone's children. Every child should have an excellent education, not just, you know, those who go to one particular kind of school that we're going to give lots of funding to, but every single child. And I think the danger is when you stratify education, when you have different kinds of schools, charter schools and traditional public schools and schools that do this kind of thing.
But it's about choice, Stephen. Haven't you heard? Give the parents the choice. And I got to be honest, I don't think parents want that choice, because when your choice is an underfunded public school or an underfunded privatized school where more resources are going to profit motives, but they've got shiny doors. That's not really a choice. It's like saying you've got the choice of arsenic or hemlock.
Yes.
At the end, you're still bald, you're dead, but the flavor was a little different.
That's right. One had a minty aftertaste.
Well, it was like almonds.
I mean, you're right. It's definitely a salesmanship job. People are sold on this idea of choice when it comes to public schools, but no one would choose a bad school. The emphasis shouldn't be choice. It should be making all schools excellent.
Absolutely.
And giving them the resources. One of the things I kept telling to legislators, and they almost seemed surprised by it, was this idea of educational equity. You know, you can't have equity of education without equity of funding. You
Duh.
Can't, yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm not a I don't teach math, but you know, you can't have a student that you spend $8,000 to educate and a student that you spend $20,000 to educate and ever expect their experiences are going to be any way close to equitable.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a rocket scientist, and he knows. It's funding, stupid.
Yeah.
And since we need a rocket scientist to tell us everything, it is the funding. But I look at this stuff, and I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, you know, I want my kids to go to the worst school possible. But yet you look at some of these school districts where when it snows outside, it's getting into the classroom. When it's time to look at a computer, it's, hey, let's share one of six. Mm-hmm. Or we've got the 486s running, if you remember computers back 100 years ago. You know, it's that kind of thing where not every kid gets an iPad and not every kid has you know, the opportunities. And it comes back to that funding, because it drives me nuts. People go, well, you know, we can't spend our way out of this problem. It's true, you really can't. But you know what? As my grandfather always said, money doesn't matter until you don't have it. And you look at a lot of these districts, they don't have it.
You're exactly right. I mean, this seems like an issue from the 60s, whenever we got rid of, you know, separate but equal. I mean, and now we're trying to have separate school systems. It just makes it easier to disenfranchise certain groups. You know, we have the charter school system, we have the public school system. We have public schools that get very little funding and public schools that get a lot of funding. And I don't think there's another country in the world that funds school districts the way we do in the United States based on local wealth.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, and it just lets us continue to double down on the status quo. It needs to be changed.
But here's the thing. We hear a lot of the talk about it's about poverty. It's a racial thing. It's the urban areas versus the wealthy areas. The reality is this is the first component of it. This is the vulnerable community that we can sell on. Hey, we'll give you $100 if you sign your kid up at our charter school, like they're doing in Milwaukee. I'm not making that up. They're doing it. hey, this school's got a nurse. You might want to send your kid to the school with a nurse. So they've put desperate people in desperate straits into a situation where, you know, hey, maybe we make this best option if we can get to it. But the overall goal is not just manipulating the poverty communities. It's about taking over all of education. So if you do live in that suburban school district that's funding or trying to fund education, eventually they're coming for you because we're all in the shark tank. And eventually the shark gets hungry for us. And that's what's going to happen in my view. I have been saying for years, what the K-12 people are going to do is what the Corinthian college people did to higher education. It's the profitization, the privatization, and a crummy, crappy education at the end of it. You show me people who graduated from those Corinthian schools, I'll show you people, well, wait a minute, there aren't a lot of them. But even the people did, they got a nice piece of paper, it hangs on the wall. Nobody's recognizing it. And that's my fear for K-12. That high school diploma is moderately viewed as it is now is going to be even worse when we move to this private system. That's just my view on it.
I think you definitely have a point when it comes to low SES and even the middle class. But when it comes to the richer kids, I think they kind of have an out. Because even now, the people who are pushing this standardization, this privatization, they don't send their kids to public school. Obama's kids don't go to public school. Arne Duncan's kids aren't going to go to a public school. Yes.
This isn't West Wing. Or at the did you watch West Wing when it was on TV?
A little bit.
At the end of West Wing, Jimmy Smits, who becomes president, sends his kid to the local D.C. public school. I'm going, you know this is fantasy, because that would never happen in a million years.
So many chefs who won't eat their own cooking.
And then why should the rest of us?
Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't go to a restaurant where a chef proudly says, you know, I'm going to give you something that I would never eat myself. It just does. It's very telling to those of us who are paying attention.
Right. So what was the most surprising thing you came out of your meetings with our representatives? What was the one thing you go, I can't believe that just happened?
There's a bunch of things I could talk about, but the one I'm going to talk about right now is, whenever we went to Senator Booker's office, it also happened at Senator Casey's office. And from what I'm talking with other bats who went on Capitol Hill, this happened again and again and again. Legislators, especially Democratic legislators, kept bringing up the issue of civil rights. They said, well, you know, we didn't want to back high-stakes standardized testing, but all the civil rights groups are telling us they want it. And I've done my research on this, and I stopped them every single time. And I said, wait a minute, that's not true. Because it's not. There is not a consensus among civil rights groups backing testing. There are 19 civil rights groups who wrote to Congress and said, please keep high-stakes testing. However, there are many, many, many civil rights groups, such as Journey for Justice, who wrote to Congress and said, please get rid of it. And Journey for Justice is a coalition of 38 civil rights groups, and 175 additional civil rights groups added on to a letter they sent to Congress. And whenever I brought this up to legislators, they didn't have to think about it. They knew exactly what I was talking about. They conveniently forget it whenever they're talking about this issue. Whenever I was in Senator Booker's office and I brought this up, his aide said, oh yeah, I think I remember seeing that, and I read it real quick, but there was one sentence I didn't like. So we parsed that sentence. Whenever I was in Senator Casey's office talking to his aide, and he tried to pull the same thing. As soon as I brought it up, he took it back and went to something else. This is sophistry. It's propaganda. They know all about it, and they're just trying to use this as a way to sell standardized testing. And moreover, of those 19 groups, civil rights groups, that now support testing, about 11 of them didn't in October. Between October and January, they changed their tune.
So what happened during that time period?
It was the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. In October, it looked like this was not going to get passed until we had a new president. But then, by January, Congress had gotten around together enough that it looked like this thing was going to pass. And I don't want to say there's anything necessarily wrong with these groups who are backing testing. I think many of them, but not all of them, are really excellent civil rights groups like the United Negro College Fund. But when you get $1.5 billion from Bill Gates, it's a little hard to go against him on standardized testing. And Gates really invests in it. He's one of the architect of Common Core, which depends on standardized testing. So if you're in charge of an organization whose goal is to make sure students of color get a college degree, which is a very laudable goal, you can't really go against someone who would make that goal impossible.
Yeah, I mean, that I guess it doesn't surprise me, though, to be honest, to take that civil rights angle, because this is where the battle is being waged right now. It's in the desperate communities. It's in the minority urban communities who don't have the economic power to be able to fight for their local schools. So they're being given their something they're told is new, and we're going to fix all the problems. And there's a lot of hope there.
Yeah, I mean, those silver bullet solutions, you know, you always have to be very skeptical of any silver bullet solution, because rarely in life is there anything, you know, one thing is going to solve all your problems. It's like, you know, the Music Man or something. It's not going to work.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just, and I guess it comes back to a couple of things. I think about my grandfather, who always said, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. I look at this education. If Bill Gates is spending $1 billion to fund something, or a couple $1 billion, maybe it's just me, you know, growing up a poor kid in the projects. I got to think motive, and you know, philanthropy is one thing, but philanthropy with a whole bunch of, you know, do what I tell you or you don't get anything, that bothers me.
Philanthropy with strings attached is not philanthropy at all.
It's just a tax break.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've got. But Stephen, I'm glad you took some time for us and spent a little time knocking on the doors there on Capitol Hill. I think we all need to take a day or two to do that and let our elected leaders know just exactly what we think. And I appreciate it, man.
That would be great.
Great talking with you, Stephen. If you want to check out Stephen's stuff, Gadfly on the Wall, his blog, go to thericksmithshow.com, click on Stephen's name, take you right there. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people. We'll talk.